This is RTI, Radio Tetris International.
Welcome back to part two of Postcard from Pot Bread. I'm slightly less grumpy than I was earlier. I'm Eric Wiltshire in the UK's Lee Banks. In Paris is Mark Gander, and Rachie's down under up in Queensland. We move on to the new bailiffs law. So we need Mark to comment on this one. The new laws have just come in the UK, meaning that UK bailiffs can't set their own fees, can't do late night visits, and can't actually knock and enter the building when there's just kids home alone. And I know our Mark, if you've just joined us recently, Mark's been campaigning via the Consumer Action Group for a long time to get some amendments to the bailiff laws, or even get some laws that work in the UK. So Mark, you must be quite a chuffed boy today.
I don't think it's going to make a lot of difference, if you want to know.
Mark.
Because let me say that, by and large, the bailiffs aren't allowed to do this kind of thing anyway. And
that was
the real
exactly
problem,
what I thought.
The real problem is the lack of enforcement, okay, and the lack of interest from the companies that employ the bailiffs, because some of the big bailiff companies, like Bristow's and Suture, like Marston's, like Rossendale's, which is a particular problem at the moment, which is headed by ex-model Julie Green, who's paying herself huge, I mean, seriously, lots of zeros, salary and bonuses and all this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's constantly being criticised, and her bailiffs, for instance, were caught out in a covert filming exercise just about a year ago. And it just goes on and on and on. I'm helping some woman at the moment who was beaten up by Rosendale's bailiffs, and then she was convicted for assault, and then a year later she appealed against the conviction, and the conviction was quashed, and still the bailiff companies are doing nothing, the local authorities which are employing them are doing nothing, and it's denial. I think that the rules needed to stop bailiffs misbehaving are already in place, and nobody wants to do anything about it, and I haven't noticed that the new rules are going to do anything else.
I don't think these new rules, quite rightly, as Mark says, make any difference at all. There is one attack that's been brought in these, which again doesn't actually change things, but that private landlords can't employ bailiffs without actually going to court.
Well, that's a good thing.
That kind of thing will make a bit of a difference. I mean, there will be a few differences, but they're not going to be very significant at all. You get two thugs who decide that they want to make some money, and you know their business is about sort of going around and collecting it. And when they're on their own and they're confronting some person who's a bit worried or underconfident or vulnerable, and also is shamed because all the neighbours can see it, quite frankly, people just don't stand up to them, and these guys get away with what they want to. It's disgusting.
I think really,
actually, the French police. Well, actually, no, probably about the same as the French police.
Rach, I'm sure that you're not privy to the exact feelings of this.
Sorry,
but
you know, I can get arrested for what I've just said about the French police. They've got an offence here called outrage, which means I cause outrage amongst the police, and they can arrest me.
Well, I'll tell them it's a British radio station, they clear off. Rich, is it similar rules down in Oz? I mean, or are they very strict about people not paying up?
Yeah, they are, but I think they handle it in a very different way. Of course, you know, we're a nation of convicts. there's actually this really good commercial on TV at the moment, because it's Australia Day tomorrow, stating that one in five Australians has an ancestor that was a convict. So I think, given that they know they're coming to a potential convict's house, they're pretty polite about it.
That's what we need.
They live in fear.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm the bailiff. What's your name? Ned Kelly.
Ned Kelly, yes.
Exactly right. No, but in all seriousness, they do handle it quite. They do. I've never heard of this stuff. They certainly don't come around when people are. It's late at night. They certainly don't, you know, present themselves when make themselves known when children are there. And even if they do, children don't answer when stranger knocks at the door. Do you, children?
No.
See?
No, that's right.
I think they handle it very differently.
Mummy, it's Jimmy Savile come to see us.
Oh, ouch. Moving along to a story that came up.
Nice man from the BBC.
Yeah, the story that came up went down faster than a brick in water, basically because David Cameron made a speech about Europe and everybody went mad about that instead. And it's all to do with the UK crime figures, which allegedly have gone down. But I don't believe a word of it. Ah, yeah, we checked everybody in Australia. Apparently, the Office for National Statistics has said the rate of reduction in recorded crime may overstate the decrease. Well, yes.
Who provided them with the figures? That's what you've got to ask. Where did the figures come from? The police provided the figures. Listen, what a good job we're doing. What a joke.
and on Sky News,
the bailiff industry saying, no, we never beat anybody up.
And then on Sky News, they went and did the best postcode to live in the UK. And one of them was somewhere up near Barnsley where nobody lives. I mean,
do you want to know what the situation is over there?
I was going to say, have you lost any heating oil lately, Lee?
No, I haven't actually. Apart from burning it because of the abject weather conditions over it.
Just a second. For those that don't know the story, because we remember it, and Rachel probably doesn't know about it. How many litres of heating oil was stolen from your house?
Probably 1,000. But it was a regular crime in country areas across Britain, and
it was one of those pipelines going across the countryside all the way back to Russia or something.
No, it's a real crime. It was huge.
Everybody thinks the oil has been delivered from Russia, but actually it's not. It's been stolen to order and being sent back.
Is it like
siphoning
petrol tanks or something?
Yes, kind of. No, the best one, actually, before Lee tells his story, you prompted me. There was a thing on television here warning people that if their fuel gauge had gone down dramatically overnight, to actually look underneath their cars. Seriously. And do you know what some loikes have been doing? I mean, talk about dangerous. They were using a large sort of drill bit, one of the sort of pyramid-shaped drill bits, drilling into the tank. Yeah, if you imagine one spark, boom, and then they were...
Some petrol is a bit dodgy, isn't it?
Exactly. And they were then allowing the petrol to flow out into big canisters, getting a wooden bung, hammering it back into the tank... So that when the bloke filled up, the other lot went back the next night and nicked another tank full of gas. And
that doesn't seem very economical with time. We just hose it out.
But, no, you know, it was just so... Oh, God. Anyway, Lee, your story.
I forgot I was watching the show. What are we on about? Yeah, no, the crime figures. Yeah, the simple fact is in Britain that the crime figures are misrepresented. There's no doubt about it. I've done a study into it and have published stuff on it. For instance, one thing that does happen is that, figures about car crashes, things like that, are totally misrepresented. The police now no longer write down... car crashes that do not involve injury. The sad thing is, and I've published a story about this, that actually they're not writing down the facts about car crashes that do involve injury. We've got proof of that, and this is endemic now throughout the police system. Now, I can't blame the police for this. If you think what the police have been cut down to in size and the amount of paperwork they have to do and the way they've got to satisfy the CPI, etc., their job is almost impossible. And the fact that the police now have been told that their starting wage is almost the equivalent to somebody who works in a supermarket is absolutely appalling. Britain is destroying itself. I'd like to have said something about the way the rented sector and is affected by this bailiff's law, but now we've passed that on. But all the way through, the system in Britain now, we are reducing our ability to defend ourselves, and major organisations like the police, because of time restraints, are being forced to misrepresent things like this, and these figures are totally misrepresented. Walk down the streets in Britain and you'll realise how bad crime is.
Mark, crime figures in Paris?
I don't know, my friend. I don't follow French news at all.
Mark Gander!
I have to say that the police here have got a lousy reputation. They're not considered to be particularly good at their job. And, I mean, there might be particularly difficulties, but, I mean, don't forget, there's the sort of shocking murders down in the East the other day of this family that was massacred in their car. And, of course, these most recent murders of these Kurdish activists. I don't expect anybody's ever going to find out who did it. And I imagine that if it was in the UK, there would be at least a much better chance.
Rachel, what's it like down in Queensland?
She's pretty good. There was a murder around the corner from my house just the other day. I had nothing to do with it, I'd like to say.
Yeah.
And the police were very busy. There were lots of police everywhere. But generally speaking, I mean, I've lived everywhere in Australia, and it's all pretty much the same. It's a thankless job. They get paid nothing to do it. They've now not only got to be policemen, they've also got to be psychologists and doctors and this and that and everything else. Mm. And I think they do a brilliant job here. And our police, of course, as I've said before, ancestors are convicts.
poacher turned gamekeeper then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We all get along great.
I just wondered if the system in Slovakia would help. I mean, I must say, I do know policemen over here, because unlike Mark, I'm integrated into the community. they have got the most appalling wages. They've got a thankless job. In the old days, they were really frowned upon. In fact, one of the he's got pips on his shoulders. The police budget is so small over here where I live that when he got his new office and his new pips on his shoulders, he actually went out and bought the paint to paint his office himself because there was no budget for it. But the police do have one marvellous thing to help them out in Slovakia, and I just want. Well, they have guns, yes. No, it's better than that. I just wonder if this would work. Well, probably not in Britain. I'm wasting my time there. But we have every night on the two commercial television stations, national ones, we have criminal news. And it lasts for half an hour. And everything from, you know, if somebody tries to hijack a bank or whatever they call it, which is very, very rare, even down to somebody who hasn't paid a debt, they will actually put the copy of their ID card with their picture on it up on the telly and go, the police want these people. And when the police, they have like, what's the programme in England, Lee, that does it?
Slovakia's Most Wanted.
Crime Watch, that's the one. So they have Crime Watch in the UK, but it's on the news every night. And I must admit, sometimes the news, the sort of crimes get so petty because they're obviously trying to fill the news up, because it's 30 minutes every day. And it's amazing how people just don't go, you know, a house break-in is national news, so people don't do it.
We have a similar thing over here called local newspapers. And that's basically what local newspapers do. There's a difference in the law over here on what you can actually publish. There was a spate of actually publishing the details of drivers or people who committed motoring offences of all sorts. And I actually campaigned against it, and we got the law changed to disallow that. Well, I thought it was absolutely wrong that people should have the fact that they've been fined or jailed for a motoring offence published in the paper as boldly as that. Because in all cases, and it is the very basics of British law, you have mitigation, and the mitigation affects your sentence, or should affect your sentence. Mm-hmm. And this was being left out, and it sounds very much like that is a bit draconian over in Slovakia. I'm surprised.
But people don't. It's the same as everybody in England got all hot under the collar about ID cards. I mean, Do you have an ID card, Rachel?
No.
No, nothing.
The closest thing we have to an ID card is a driver's license, and not everybody has to have one.
How does that work?
If you don't have a drive...
Well, little children don't drive. They don't have an ID card. The closest thing we would have to any form of, you know, ID, unless you carry a passport everywhere you go, but we don't have an ID card as such.
Oh, well, everybody here has an ID card. Everybody in the UK got completely out of kilter over the fact of having them. And I've had an ID card for 10 years now. Never bothers me. And in fact, it saves me a load of grief because if they say, where do you live, which I often can't pronounce, I just give them the ID card and they go, thank you very much. See you later. Now, it does do a lot of good. And on the newer ones, you've got everything on there. You know, if you're like me, an asthmatic, if I was really sick with asthma, I would be on the floor passed out. And a policeman, he's not going to know, but with my card, he does know.
Yeah, see, the thing is, in Britain, you know, there was all this hoo-ha about ID cards, and I, as you know, are totally against ID cards, but in fact, we have ID cards. The only difference is that we have an array of ID cards.
Yeah, sure.
You know, you can't take money out of your own bank without proving who you are. You can't put money into your own bank without proving who you are. You can't buy cigarettes or beer if you're under the age of... The law says that you can buy beer and cigarettes at the age of 18 and 16, but by God, you've got to have an ID card that shows you're over 21 to do it in Britain. We've gone down that road. It's just we have to now have a thick wallet full of them.
Oh, right. Okay. Anyway, latest piece of advice from the wonderful Environment Agency in Great Britain. I cannot believe I'm reading this out, but having said that, I'm just thinking what they do here as well. Anyway, according to the Environment Agency, build a snowman.
You see, it doesn't make sense, does it?
It does, actually.
Because, I love it.
It does.
Well, the thing, the Environment Agency have actually now rescinded this bit of advice because they've realised that even if you build a snowman, it'll still melt and cause flooding.
Yeah.
But slower.
But it won't really do it.
It does. It does. Honestly, it was having seen this on the. I saw the story somewhere, and then every flaming night about 10 o'clock, when all the normal laybys for shoppers are empty and all that sort of thing, in comes the snowplows. My God, the snowplows come in and they don't just sort of shift it to the side. They build huge, like mini mountains of the stuff because it's so deep here. By the way, quick weather report, it's snowing. And
it's snowing here too.
Mark?
No, it's just grey.
Now, the interesting...
And brown.
The interesting thing is, these mountains of snow will stay... They look horrible later on. But, you know, we're into sort of springtime, the temperature's coming up, and these mountains of snow really decrease very, very slowly. So, in theory, they could be rightly.
Yeah, but we don't have that amount of snow, do we? It's just a ludicrous idea. I just don't understand where our government can come up with these sort of ideas. Yeah, you know, homes are going to be flooded anyway. We now, because of this strange world that we live in, you know, we've had a load of snow. That caused us loads of problems. Now we're going to face flooding. That's the way it is. And for the Environment Agency to actually think that building a snowman makes any difference is just insanity.
Okay, moving along, boys and girls. The Taliban leaders label Prince Harry a coward. Idiots. For comparing the Afghan conflict with computer games. Nope.
They don't even have computer games. What do they know?
They do, probably, because knowing the rich ones are those, they got all sorts of things. And in actual fact, I got into trouble for this years and years ago with the man at SES Astra, which a lot of people know as Sky around Europe, the big satellite things. And I described the man controlling the satellites at 26,000 kilometres up in the sky as playing a big game of Space Invaders. Because that's exactly what happens if they lose automated control. He sits there with a little joystick and he fires rockets 26,000 miles up and keeps the satellite in the right place. And I don't understand this thing at all, because why is anybody interested in what the Taliban have got to say?
Well, it isn't. You see, it isn't to do with the Taliban. This isn't a story about the Taliban. It's about about a member of our royal family, Harry.
Yeah.
Who once again has proved himself to be doubtfully in that position. Huh? This chap, right, who has a position of great power in this country and a position of great influence,
right,
has said that killing people is like playing a computer game. Now, I know that's not exactly what he said, but that was the implication behind what he said.
Let me just describe something to you, Lee. You get into one of the typical British Forces helicopters. You put night sight visions on. You are looking at a computer screen in one eye whilst looking at the rest of it through a normal eye, like a cameraman would, for example. And it is a bit like playing a video game in what you see in front of you.
Yeah. And it must be very surreal.
Can I come in on this, please? Because, I've got nothing against the Waleses, and quite frankly, I think it's great, and I'm very happy with the whole institution. No problem with Harry. I think he was an idiot to talk like this. He's out there doing a job. We know what all these guys have to go and do. And I hope that they're sort of moral and sensitive enough to consider that what they're doing is relatively unpleasant, necessary but unpleasant. But to come back and talk about it in this way, and particularly for this gentleman who's going to be in the public eye really for the rest of his life and is going to need a lot of security, I think this kind of thing really is very undiplomatic. I think it was very, very ill-advised. So I'm no fan of the Taliban, but actually I think I can see what the Taliban were saying. I can understand why. And I think that Harry made a real mistake. He shouldn't be talking like that.
What should he have done when the camera's live on him? And it was. The camera's live on him. Man says, "Have you killed any Taliban?" What's he supposed to say?
I think he should just say, "There are some things about going to war that I'm not prepared to discuss."
That's a good answer. Yeah, I could go with that.
It's a good answer, but it also is, again, it's something that goes against the grain as far as news publication is concerned. And the simple fact is that Harry was arrogant and insensitive, as anti-war campaigners have described him in Britain. No, and they're quite right.
If I ask you a question and I fudge the answer, you as a journalist are going to push me harder.
No, but he's saying that's right. The point I'm trying to get across is that, very simply, we have a very powerful man in this country who has a lot of influence, who has dressed up in a Nazi uniform, who's danced naked in front of people in Las Vegas, and who now says that killing people is like playing a computer game. I think that a man with his authority and his power and his influence and his public persona needs to be guided.
Right, Lee, let's try this.
I think Lee's right.
Let's try this. Swap your head from journalist to PR. Not easy, I know, Lee. So I'm now Lee, and you're Harry, and I say to you, Harry, have you killed any Taliban?
I think the answer that Mark gave is perfectly adequate. And as a PR person, as opposed to being a journalist, because PR people are just failed journalists, I would suggest that actually is the way to handle it. But there is something deeper to it than PR.
Swap your heads over again. Would you have allowed him to get away with that answer? Let's try the... All right, Mark.
What bloody arrogance would you allow him to get away with the answer? He gives the answer and that's it. And one would hope that he's got the bottle to say, that's it, and that's the end of the interview.
Would you let him get away with that, Lee?
No, I would... Well, as a journalist,
What choice do you have?
Maybe
we see in the newspaper, Harry Duck's question about whether he killed people, shock, horror. Well, so what? Then let people speculate. You know, I mean, of course he's killed people. Anybody who goes to the war has either directly killed or been involved in the whole operation of killing people. Why do they have to ask these naive, crass questions? But why did Harry have to give this naive, crass answer?
Because I think it's very pertinent and germane to English society that you know the workings of the minds of the people who have power over you.
Well, I think that this is the kind of question about war which I am not prepared to answer you. I think that gives us also a sense of the working of the mind, and it gives a sense of maybe a man with some responsibility and integrity. And I completely agree with you.
It doesn't allow the people to know what's actually happening in the world.
I think they know already.
I think they've lots of other places to find out.
Yeah, exactly. Let's move on, boys and girls, because I'm worried. I'm really worried. Three of us here have a friend called Henry. And there's been a spate of Henry thefts in the UK. Henry's been nicked. Somebody has been stealing Henry vacuum cleaners.
In those little suckers.
Yeah, those little suckers have been stolen from all over the place, especially in Worthing. And this bloke has gone round and said, "Can I borrow your vacuum cleaner, love?" And then the vacuum cleaner never comes back. They're all being nicked.
Terrible.
It's true.
It's true. The police force in West Sussex said, "We are warning people to be very wary of people claiming to be from a nearby business and requesting to borrow a vacuum cleaner." They've actually put out a Crime Stoppers notice where you can phone 0800 in the UK, 0800 555 111, if your Henry vacuum cleaner has been nicked.
Isn't it funny, though? It goes right back to what we were talking about, the way the police now treat crime. Actually, something like this has to come off the police for the press to actually use it.
Oh, no.
And this is the story about crime across Britain that the police have put out rather than the real stories about crime. And, it's an interesting story that people go and pinch Henriettas and Henrys.
So the police are getting hard on Henrys.
Yeah, exactly.
Hard on Henry.
Sure.
And very.
So, how many words is that, Rachel?
Eight.
All right. As long as it's just not two, that's all.
Very quickly, a lovely story as we come to the end. A journalist called Mark Hales has been forced to pay £111,000. Pardon me. After breaking somebody's car that he borrowed. In other words, I think it was the engine that blew up. The car used to belong to a Formula One driver called David Piper. Well, I confess I don't know. But anyway, the car was wrecked, and because the journalist borrowed it to do a feature on, he has to make it better for him. Sad, really, isn't it?
Well, that's it. This story just didn't make sense, really, because... You know, really, whoever had employed the journalist to do it should have had it insured.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
And there is one other piece of absolutely riveting news I've got to share with everybody in the last 10 seconds of the programme. January the 27th, 2013, is when the best programme on the world starts its new series. Top Gear is back.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes, it's back. And we'll be back next week as we... that's it. It's time to say goodbye, Mark.
Yes, goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, Lee.
Bye.
Goodbye, Rachel.
Goodbye, Rachel.
And goodbye, Eric. See you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
This is RTI, from the heart of Europe to the world. The Station of the Stars.